I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, July 30th, 2024. Both USA Olympic soccer teams are through to the knockout stages as Sofia and Georgie are absolutely cooking. Who cares? Because Steven Nudorosic is the pommel horse meme lord that is bringing America together in these divided times. Oh, and since last we podcasted, the Colorado Rapids did this thing called winning the Rocky Mountain Cup. Joining me now to talk about the Rocky Mountain Cup, to boycott Leagues Cup, and ultimately stan the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, my good friend, off from a week from the podcast, Rabbi Mark Goodman. Mark, I missed you last week.
Thanks, Matt. I missed you too. Matt is wearing the shirt that I bought him in Mexico as a I miss you thing. I'm wearing my Keep the Han and Hanukkah shirt because it's what was clean. And the Rapids hat that I've been wearing nonstop for the last 8 years. I'm good, Matt. I have seen a lot of soccer. I saw some soccer in person. I got to see Liverpool take on Real Betis. And I, as I put up on the socials, I stood not 8 feet away from a divine being of light, a man amongst boys, one of the greatest soccer players ever to grace the planet Earth. Mohamed Salah. Unfortunately, he breezed through the mix zone like he was trying to cling on to a 40-yard struck ball, getting behind the line for his bazillionth assist of the year. So we did not actually get to talk to him, but that's cool. And it was just cool to be. I did an article, if you're bored and you want to read it, on Pittsburgh Soccer Now about, you know, the fan experience and how this was kind of like a pilgrimage experience for a lot of American soccer fans. I am a changed man by going to this game, Matt.
Okay.
Yeah, in the sense that, like, we've always made fun of cash grab FC midseason friendlies, you know, and after having spoken with the organizers and met with the media and gone to the press conference and kind of like, you know, been on that high level. I mean, you know, Pittsburgh only gets like a major kind of soccer friendly at the big football stadium every like 3 years at best. And we don't always get the kind of like choices of the choice teams. It was Dortmund a couple years ago. Before that, many years ago, it was Chelsea. So just
getting Liverpool is a big deal.
Liverpool's a huge deal. And I think the other thing, and I think just kind of understanding that, like, I mean, I did this article and my favorite, I met a bunch of people who had never seen them in person. And my personal favorite was a guy who drove with his family of five from Ottawa to see them. It's a 9-hour drive. You have to go through passport, customs, whatever. And he'd been a Liverpool fan for 30 years and he'd never seen them in person. And he was on a vacation and the next stop was Philadelphia. So I just cannot imagine what it would be like to have a favorite team, to have never seen them in person for, you know, 30 years, and then see him twice in the span of 5 days. Now, that being said, I've never seen my favorite English Premier League team in person either. I've never seen Arsenal Football Club. So, you know, I've only been an Arsenal fan for about 15 years, so I don't really know if it's, you know, I merit it, but, and I will eventually get on a plane and go to London. That's what I will do.
We need to do,
but it's fun.
Cause Mark, we haven't seen each other in a while. I don't believe I haven't come to visit you in Pittsburgh. There's a wedding for a mutual friend that we have that is May of next year. I think the weekend before my birthday. I need to look at that. So I'm probably couch crashing with you. We're going to do a live HTHNL, hopefully. that weekend as well. You've come out a few times to Colorado and stayed with me, usually surrounding a Rapids game. But no, we need to do a boys trip. We need to do it. We need to see a Holding the High London Derby properly. Especially now
I turned 50 in 2 years, so that's a good excuse. The last time I took a major soccer trip was my 40th birthday. I said to my wife, "Hey, can I, you know, go to Seattle by myself and see a soccer game?" That was my 40th birthday.
Okay.
So 50th birthday could be Arsenal.
So we need to line this up, Mark. We're like, I take a week off. I come initially stop up in Pittsburgh. There's some MLS game that we can like drive to and then take a plane to London Heathrow. And then, you know, we can go see if we time it right. Maybe Fulham's on a Saturday and Arsenal's on a Sunday or something like that. And we can have a jolly good time. I'm sure there is plenty of nerdy stuff that in the spirit, Mark, of what you said earlier about taking your children on vacation and them not appreciating some of the more nerdy stuff that you did at the Cleveland Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sure there is an esoteric museum exhibit that we can find somewhere in London that we can go to. I have never been to the Imperial War Museum, Mark, and so obviously as two World War One, World War Two history buffs, we could certainly go see that. Mark, as two... There's got to be something Israel or Jewish that they have in the British Museum that they've taken as well.
I teach an entire history class and I use photos from the British Museum. There's some really amazing stuff. They have a stele of a Assyrian conqueror that has like of all the countries they conquered, and one of them is the King of Israel, like bowing down. It's rad. Anyways, I use it in my history lecture.
Okay, so in any case, Mark, we can go see that as well. And certainly, you know, I as the descendant of Irish immigrants can be grumpy. So, okay, Mark, your 50th birthday, me, Portsmouth, East Coast, MLS game, either Fulham, Arsenal, or something in London, not Chelsea. We can go to the new Tottenham Stadium. The new Tottenham Stadium's nice. I'm not setting foot in Stamford Bridge. I've already done that before. And we'll do it and we'll have a jolly good time, Mark. And we'll get Porrick Smith to come along. And after two beers, I will go full Irish. Oh, in the home of the enemy. And I will be declaring war on the British Empire. And it's going to be great. And you're going to come along with this, Mark. Or at the very least, you're going to film the shenanigans and then totally roast me on Twitter because there's not enough of that material on the internet just yet. Mark, let's talk about, should we talk about the Olympics first, Rabbi? Cause that's the,
I'd be happy to. Tuesday's my day off. So I spent the day watching Olympics. I watched archery and then I watched two soccer matches and not the ones that most people would watch. So I bet you either watched the US game or watched highlights of the US game. I did not.
So the game today, Mark, that was the 3-0 victory over, was it Zambia? I can't keep track of who's playing who. Was it Zambia? For the men today?
Gambia.
Thank you. That sounds right. So in any case,
By the way, till right now, I did not realize there were two countries in Africa. One is Gambia and one is Zambia. That's not fair. That should not be a thing. Anyways, okay. There's also a Guyana and a Guyana, which in South America, which also shouldn't be a thing. But what are you going to do?
Aren't there two Congos as well? Because isn't there the Democratic Republic of the Congo?
Yeah, I mean, there's two Koreas too. But I'm talking about two countries spelled differently. Very close.
Pronounced
anyways,
very similarly.
Okay, my first game, I watched the 9 a.m. I watched Egypt take apart Spain basically with long balls, like with like sitting deep, root one. I was like, this is the way Americans play. What are you doing playing this way, Egypt? I didn't know you'd been studying our tactics from the mid to late 90s. And then I watched the final game of the day, which was Japan versus Israel. Because I'm a fan of the Israeli soccer team, and they held their own for a while. Japan were very, you know, methodical, tactical, precise, and in the 90th minute, Israel coughed it up, so it was a shame. So, but, you know, they couldn't have, there wasn't any, even if Israel had won, they weren't going to make it because they had blown it in their group. So, but I think it was one of those with Israel, it was like, we're just happy to be here kind of situation. I did not realize until I tuned into the Egypt game that Egypt topped their group over in a group with Spain, which was, wow, that's pretty impressive, right? The Spanish national team just won the Euros. So the U23s, you know, finishing second to Egypt feels like a cosmic realignment. Matt, what are your thoughts on the Olympics, Olympic soccer, other sports you're watching, stuff?
Well, the men's gymnastics was absolutely fantastic, Mark. So to see Steven Nedorosic and that group finally, for the first time in 16 years, get a medal, see the absolute meme and the joy that they are, obviously was super fun. And then juxtaposing that with just the continued domination of the women's, I guess, spoiler alert, listeners. Mark, you're showing me a phone. I'm looking at the same FOTMOP screen as you are, Rabbi.
The U.S. did not play Zambia or Gambia. They played Guinea.
They played Guinea. Okay. Zambia was who the women's team played one or two games ago. I'm getting them confused. So in any case, listeners, both the men's and the women's U.S. Olympic teams have punched their ticket to the knockout stage. The women won their first two group stage games, and so they've already qualified for the quarterfinals. TBD on whether or not they win their group. There's some weird clinching scenarios that they have going on there. And the men opened up their Olympics by losing to France. Mark, it is borderline unfair that, like, it's one thing for the United States to bring in Walker Zimmerman and Georgi Mihailovic, but like the fact that France gets Lacazette is just like the not fair. I saw a really funny meme. It was there was some old Simpsons episode that was like kids competing in something and then like Homer joining in, and the meme was like this is a competition for children, and it was like, yeah, and Homer beat all of them. So yeah, that's how I felt about Lacazette absolutely cooking the U.S. defense in that first game.
Throwback name for old school soccer fans, not that old, like 5 years ago, but like Egypt's main overage player is Mohamed El Neni. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, it's interesting that like some countries you like, and the broadcast also noted that like Japan didn't bring anybody. They were just like, whatever, we're going to play our 23s. That's fine. I thought that was kind of rad.
Is Honda still not playing, Mark? Does he want to limp along as like a player coach? Any case, listeners, so U.S. opens up. They're playing France, host nation, one of the favorites, certainly. They lose. They play poorly in the second half. I think it was even in the first half. They had a bunch of chances. They lost to a better team that was more talented that finished their opportunities. Surprise, surprise, they're Rapids fans. But then you follow that up, Mark, playing a New Zealand team in a game that you had to win, and you come out, you dominate them in the first half, you win that one overall 4-1, and then you play Guinea earlier today, and you win 3-0. Georgi Mihailovic opens the scoring in both of these two games, Mark. So there was a penalty that was drawn in the New Zealand game. Georgi converts that, cool and calm, just as you like, just as we've seen from him do for the Rapids in recent weeks. And then he opens up with a banger of a free kick, Mark, in a very similar angle and situation to that LAFC free kick he had earlier the season. And rather than going far post like he did against Hugo Lloris, he went near post on that one. Absolute banger. And then Kevin Paredes scores as well in the 31st and the 75th minute. So the U.S. finishes second in the group, I believe. And they will play, Mark, on Friday, August 2nd. That will be 7 a.m. Mountain Time, and they're playing Morocco, and that is the quarterfinals, listeners. So bear in mind that this doesn't go to the round of 16, single game knockouts, and because of the way that the structure works, we're going straight to the quarterfinals. So Mark, if the U.S. were to beat Morocco, they go into a semifinal, and because it's the Olympics, there's always a third place game. So listeners, if the U.S. advances, if they beat Morocco on Friday, no matter what, they will be playing for a medal. And to compare that, Mark, with where this men's program has been, where in my adult lifetime, the U.S. hasn't made the last time the U.S. made the Olympics, folks, Marvell Wynn was on the team. Josie Altidor was on the team. A prepubescent Gucci Onyewu was on the team. So credit to Marko Mitrovic and what he's done with that, Mark. Two really fantastic performances, the veteran players leading, and the fact that it's happening in part because of an overage Rapids player contributing is really, really great. Kind of disappointing, Mark, that Gianluca Busio got hurt, and so needing a little bit more bite in the midfield. If only there was a, you know, dual eight who could do a bunch of things really, really well and also provide some goal scoring, because the goals are pretty much, it was Walker Zimmerman on a header against New Zealand. Other than that, for the most part, it's been Georgi and then the wingers, because Paxton Aronson scored. Kevin Paredes scored this one. So, you know, that kid from, you know, who got the benefit of the doubt in the call-up because he plays with Lionel Messi, not exactly producing goals. And I could think of a Rapids player right now who may or may not be goal dangerous in a position in the midfield. But that's neither here nor there. Mark, anything you want to say about what the men's team's accomplished, how Georgie's cooking, or do we want to talk about the women?
I mean, I think it's a great story for the U.S. men. It's a hard-fought and a difficult one, and I look forward to, you know, I look forward every summer to that moment in our working lives in our offices where we set aside or we half butt cheek our emails and our phone calls while watching a soccer match at the same time. I've been doing that for like 10 years now. I worked at a Jewish day school for a long time, and like nothing really mattered over the summer. So you could kind of like clock in, take a like be lackadaisical and kind of go about it. Now it's a little harder to mail it in, although summer's still pretty slow. I don't have a whole lot going on, and I'm really glad for that. So I plan on really not working very hard and watching these knockout matches.
Mark, do you remember my layoff from the solar startup that went under and then me getting the next consulting job that I had in the summer when we were still recording? You were still in Colorado at this time. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Okay. I delayed my start date at that company a week so that I could finish watching all of... I started the day after the World Cup final 2018 for that
2018,
one. And
right.
they wanted me to start that week. And I specifically delayed it so I could watch the quarterfinals, the semis. And then the final was on the weekend, but in any case.
That was the summer that I was packing up my entire house. So if I was a little distracted and don't remember it, it's because everything I owned had to go into a box and get moved across the country. So
any case, listeners, so this past Sunday, the United States women's team played and the Colorado girls are absolutely cooking right now, folks. Sophia nice. Smith with a brace in this game, a 4-1 dismantling of Dermeinschap women's in the case of Germany's women's national team, a 4-1 victory. It was 1-1 at the 22nd minute when Germany got their lone goal. But then Sophia Smith in the 44th, Mallory Swanson in the 26th, and then Williams scoring in the 89th as well. So I think Trinity Rodman is questionable for this final group stage game, Mark. So there might be a late swap out with the alternates. But the two Colorado girls up top are scoring goals for fun. They are assisting each other. And while we have not seen goal contributions from the great Lindsay Horan as captain, she's doing pretty much everything else in the midfield. And so I think it's great to see, Mark, you look at two really dominating performances for their first two games as well. And then their final group stage game, let me look this up. I can't remember who they're playing. They're playing Australia. So they are playing the Matildas, who usually have a decent women's team, Mark. But I believe I would expect the women to get a result in this game, Mark. And I continue to – I have not seen another women's team in so far the two group stage games, the data that we have, that says to me that they are clearly superior to the United States women's national team. There's not a knockout game, a knockout opponent, Mark, that I could perceive in which I would clearly say that the U.S. are the underdogs. Whereas certainly this time last year, when we were talking about the Women's World Cup final in New Zealand and Australia, I certainly felt that England was a better team. I felt that Spain was a better team. And I was not confident in, I don't even remember who they lost to. It was so long ago. Was it Australia? I think it was Australia in penalties. I did not feel confident about the U.S. going into that Sweden game. So I'm not saying, Mark, I'm not predicting that the U.S. are going to win gold in the case of this competition. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be an underdog at a future game, but I'm way more confident about them after two group stage games going into the knockouts than I was about them after two group stage games in New Zealand last year. So, Mark, I'm very confident in saying I do believe that the United States women's national team will medal. That is a step in the right direction for what Emma Hayes is trying to do. That is a massive improvement off of where this national program was last summer. And then the fact that the U.S. men's team, I think, has a game that they're playing against a Morocco side that is beatable and plausibly they can be competing for a medal. You know, I think we said on the Megapod, Mark, that myself, Braden Nurse, and Mitchell Harrell just wanted to see the U.S. get out of the group, finish second to France, and then be competitive in the knockouts. And if that's happening with Georgie doing really good stuff, then I'm probably content with that. The notion, Mark, that we could have both programs medal as well, I think would be as impressive as what we've seen now from USA Gymnastics in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, I think just the idea that America goes to the Olympics and the soccer teams are relevant at all is really, really great. The women's team obviously has been dominant for years, but it is a great story for the two programs. Of course, the expectations have always been so, so, so much higher for the women, which is why 4 years ago it was such a shocker. It's also a little, I mean, I've never really thought about there's a minor inequity. It's interesting that, like, the men have lots of opportunities to play in big tournaments and play for club and make a lot of money, and the women have had fewer opportunities until the NWSL and the kind of like women's Champions League club started forming up and offering a lot of money. And that's really recent, you know, it's like the last 4-8 years. But there's a small inequity in the fact that the men have the World Cup every 4 years and the women have the World Cup and then the Olympics every couple of years as their two major tournaments. I mean, the Euros are very big for the men and I guess not as big for the women, I suppose.
Well, it's not relevant to the US. There's no, you know,
of course, but I'm just saying in terms of like big tournament kind of things, but yeah. So it's just a kind of a side note that I think it's interesting that, like, you know, the women have a couple of opportunities to shine on the international stage. The men less so because of the way the U23s works out. Although, you know, like, it's really, really cool to have this opportunity for the U23s. I'm just thinking kind of like in the broader context. I know that this was a deal that FIFA and the Olympics cut many years ago so that the men would play the U23s so that it wouldn't scoop the Euros and FIFA's kind of like ability to make money. I wonder if there's a future where we start to rethink this, you know, where we start to say, like, you know, it's a weird deal. Like, the Olympics is supposed to be the best teams in the world. It's supposed to be the best athletes in the world. The fact that FIFA cut a deal because it had a business advantage to them, or a disadvantage to them. It's weird. It's weird. It's weird. And maybe we'll rethink it.
You see also as well, Mark, for the overage players, what it means to depending on what they've achieved with the senior national team. You know, Neymar was as emotional, you know, I think the most emotional in a positive way I've ever seen him was him converting that penalty to win Olympic gold for the first time for the Brazil men's team on home soil. And I think the only thing that would be more significant for him in his entire career as somebody who's won a bunch of trophies at Barcelona and is now making more money in a day than you or I will make in our life would be winning a World Cup for Brazil. And so, like, the notion, Mark, why don't we have, I could see a world where, you know, you have countries that, you know, have another summer competition choose to prioritize the Olympics. I think it would be a fun experiment to see a compressed version of a World Cup with a proper, like, fully operational men's team rather than a U23 plus three overage.
So, yes. And the analog for Americans is the 92 Dream Team in basketball, where, like, it meant so much to those guys. It meant so much to Barkley and Jordan and Magic to win an Olympic gold medal. I mean, it was just such a big deal for them. You know, there's other ways of doing it. We were just watching 3-on-3 basketball, which is it's only the second time they've ever had this in the Olympics. It's kind of weird. It's really fun. I mean, you have to be an absolute nerd for the pick and roll in order to enjoy the 3-on-3 tournament, because it's just picks and rolls. It's just all pick and roll. Like, can you defend a pick and roll? Can you run the pick and roll? Then you're doing the 3v3. That would be a way of kind of doing this, which is like, what if they played 7-a-side soccer as the Olympic version? You know, what if it was 9-a-side?
Volo football, Mark, with Kylian Mbappe, Lionel Messi. Like, that's I want to watch that on the Rick and Morty interdimensional cable box. I want to see that at the Olympic Games.
Oh, my God. Yes. I love the shout out to Rick and Morty. All right, let's move it along.
Okay.
We can talk about this all day.
Yeah, Mark, Leagues Cup, we'll talk what this means from a Rapids perspective, as we got to see that Portland Timbers won at the death against Lyon in the first group stage game of the Rapids group, and the only group stage game that will not include Colorado Rapids. Mark, we've seen a lot of discussion around Leagues Cup and that being a cash grab. Don Garber had some media availability at the MLS All-Star game. Are we even going to talk about the MLS All-Star game, Mark? Keegan played, Moyes played, they looked okay. Who cares? They had fun. Yay.
I didn't watch it, but I feel bad now that I realize that Keegan played, but
yes. Yeah. Keegan started. Moyes came off the bench. I was disappointed that they didn't get to play together, but in any case, Leagues Cup is happening, Mark. Some fans think that it's a cash grab. Ironically, the supporters groups that we've seen the biggest outrage from or openly discussed boycotts or boycotts that are executed at scale to the level that the Rapids had at the New England Revolution game in league play last year are mostly coming from some of the newer markets. So I look at Atlanta, I look at Austin, soccer markets that don't have a lot of history with their club teams in the Open Cup. St. Louis is also in there, but you know they have a lot of history with the Open Cup, albeit prior to St. Louis City coming into the league. And it kind of juxtaposes, Mark, the dialogue that we're having of if MLS teams choose to, MLS fans choose to boycott these games, is that not making a statement? You compare that with Don Garber's just increasingly out of touch comments where he comments on an Open Cup game that Atlanta's first team was playing and there were only 1,400 people in the building. And he said, you know, that's a big building to open and have, you know, spending money on to only get 1,400 people. He said that despite not knowing that that Open Cup game was played at Kennesaw State, which is about an hour outside of Atlanta. So again, does Don Garber even have all this information and all this, Mark, with the understanding that, you know, Open Cup was never really making a whole lot of money? You had a thread that went semi-viral by, you know, MLS.
Not semi, very.
Very, okay. But to the extent that the 1.4 algorithm...
1.4 million impressions and 16,000 likes. So.
Yeah, so, you know...
I'm just flexing on Matt. That's what I'm here doing.
With some possible solutions on that front. But so, you know, Mark, I'll come out and say it. The only Leagues Cup games that I will be watching for this version of the tournament are going to be games that the Rapids are playing in or games that prepare me for covering the Rapids. So I saw the second half of the Portland Leon game. In theory, if the Rapids make it to the knockout, I would watch the game between teams that would become the Rapids' next future opponent. But so, for example, Pachuca's playing Red Bulls right now. I'm not watching that game. I'm not watching any game that doesn't immediately affect the Rapids. And so I'm doing it purely from a coverage standpoint. As soon as the Rapids are eliminated from Leagues Cup, I will not watch the rest of the tournament. If Messi comes back and he's fully healthy and he's playing in a final against one of the Gigantes at Inter Miami Stadium in the final, I would maybe reconsider that. But Mark, we continue to see people living their values in choosing how much to consume of Leagues Cup and making that as a clear public statement about how fans feel about Leagues Cup and how they feel that compared to MLS sacrificing the Open Cup. And all this to say, Mark, I think the quiet part that we haven't heard an MLS executive say out loud is when they talk about the financial implications or the market or the audience for Leagues Cup. I think they're also, they haven't openly acknowledged it, that really the target audience for Leagues Cup are Mexican immigrants who are fans of a Liga MX team based, right, but who are based in the United States. That is not your primary audience for MLS and Apple TV.
Right. So it's, I appreciate the attempt by the MLS marketing team, hierarchy, commissioner squad, and the ownership to say, hey, MLS is a great product. Perhaps if we play Liga MX teams, the fans of those Liga MX teams will cross over and become MLS fans. But I think the part that everybody's keeping secret that we all know is the real audience for Leagues Cup is fans of these other teams, which is why Mac, this is why Matt is wearing Unal Tigres shirt right now, which is like, that's the joke, right? There's something awkward about, and there always has been something awkward about the fact that Latino fans who are second and third generation American born, you know, citizens, more likely than not are supporting a team in Mexico than they are a U.S. team. And the first generation, the people who came over, for sure, right? They're absolutely still Tigres and Monterrey and Club America fans. And we know this because when you have a Mexican Liga MX team in an American stadium playing an American team, the audience is like, the fans are like way out of whack. It's like 80-20 or worse.
Toluca had a home game last
and
year.
And by the way, I just want to say, I said or worse like it's a bad thing. I want to qualify that. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't mind it at all. I think it's great to support your club. This is my point about the thing I said at the beginning about Liverpool, right? I think there are people who are like horrified. And this was an angle I was thinking about writing for the article before I just kind of went, no, I'm just going to go with it, which was there's an angle on that article that I didn't write, which I thought about, which is asking everybody, you know, you're a Liverpool fan. Who do you support domestically? Or do you support American soccer when you're not rooting for the English Premier League? And the reason that I didn't even bother was I didn't really care at some point, which is like, I was kind of happy that people were happy that they were watching the team that they want to see. And I think that that's kind of something. It's just a very, I think Americans and all human beings specifically soccer fans are very impatient. And we're all kind of like, a lot of people are like, oh, you know, this needs to benefit MLS now, or the tradition of US Open Cup needs to be respected. And I, for those of you who've been following my controversial remarks on Twitter, I am an all in for Open Cup. I'm a huge fan of it. I go to the games. I cover the games. I've been writing about Open Cup. Nobody's a bigger fan. Nobody's a bigger supporter than I am. But I'm starting to slowly come around on, I wouldn't say the capitalist aspect of it, but the reality of it, which is the U.S. is going to monetize and the owners are going to monetize what they can monetize. And if there is money to be made, they're going to go and make it. So the argument that I would make is effectively MLS needs to figure out how to best monetize Liga MX and Leagues Cup in a way that will ultimately create more balance down the road. And they need to also create a television package and a structure with US Open Cup that financially benefits MLS clubs and smaller clubs at the same time. Like, it's got to work for MLS, or they're just going to give up, right? And I don't love that profit is the major motivator, but like, this is America. Don't catch you tripping on, don't catch you slipping on, as Childish Gambino would say. I don't really know what the rest of that is. But the point is, like, it's a profit motivated league, and we're going to have to bend to the whims of Don Garber, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate reality, Mark, and I think we have very good data on this, even just from 1 year's worth of League Cup, which is the reality that US-based Liga MX fans bring in more money and more revenue, or are more easy to monetize at scale for League Cup than anything that you had with US Open Cup, with USL fans, NASL fans, what's the other one? NISA as well, those ones as well, Mark. And so there's a bunch of reasons behind that.
I don't even
think
about NISA anymore, but yeah.
it's a lifestyle brand with a few soccer teams that may or may not exist in 2 years. To your point, Mark, there's a bunch of reasons why Open Cup has failed. The fact that some Soccer United marketing and U.S. soccer decoupled from themselves. I don't remember when that happened, Mark. It was a few years ago. Basically, you know, like, Open Cup is a middle child that, you know, nobody really wants to prop up. If MLS props it up, then that then leads to advantages for USL. So it's the sacrificial lamb. It's the it's caught in the middle of the crosshairs of the U.S. soccer wars and is a political football between USL, MLS, and to the extent that U.S. soccer is openly warring or, coordinating with any of those. And so it needs better, but all parties are at fault for the fact that Open Cup hasn't gotten to this situation. But at the same time, it's not MLS's problem, or it's not MLS's responsibility, or at least they're not taking responsibility for it anymore. And as long as Apple TV does not have the broadcasting rights to it, right, it's not something that MLS is going to ultimately prioritize. And the reality is, Mark, as much as you and I have loved seeing all of the Colorado matchups that we've had, you know, I was there, what was it, last year, it was Wednesday night, I think it was a 7 p.m. game, tickets were $10 for Switchbacks versus Hailstorm, yeah, and there might have been 1,000 people there, if that. Mark, you and I have been to many an Open Cup games at Dick's Sporting Goods Park where season ticket holders got comp tickets, or there was the South Platte Derby, the first one. I think it was $10 for the first one for Hailstorm. There were like 2,000 people there. I was there for the Rapids 2 game against...
We've often talked about the hipster cred aspect of it, which is like, you know, the cool part about being a US Open Cup fan, and we've been talking about this for years, is like, it's the ability to say, I saw Nirvana before anybody. I saw Nirvana with 8 other people in a dusty club when they were still called Mud Lover Chuck Banger, you know, like when then, like, and that's cool, but the reality is, yeah, but nobody wants to open up a stadium and fill it with employees and then barely turn a profit. I mean, like, or not turn a profit, like lose money on that game. So there are going to have to be some financial ways around this. I think one of the simplest ways to do it, and this is, I'm not necessarily advocating this as a solution, but I see this as a possible outcome, which is MLS fully pulls out of this, and then US Soccer, because they still want this to exist and it deserves to exist, effectively taxes MLS and says, fine, you'll pay a membership fee to US Soccer to continue being the Division I club, and we'll take most of that money, we'll pass it on to the lower division clubs so they can continue to have Open Cup. That'd be a way to do it. I wouldn't love it. And then at the end of Open Cup, the Open Cup team and the MLS Cup champions would like play each other in like a community shield situation.
Yeah,
community shield type thing. You know, okay. at the lower division field, and they'd get all the money. So that'd be my dream. But
okay,
not ideal, but where we're probably headed. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah. Okay. Listeners, we've made our opinions known. You know, we'll cover, you know, HDHO.
Matt's was probably more popular than mine.
Holding the High Line will continue for the month of August as long as the Rapids are still in it. And we will cover it from a Rapids perspective. As soon as the Rapids end their time in Leafs Cup, we're not coming back until the week before whatever is that game when we resume, what, Labor Day weekend when the Rapids are, I think it's away to Minnesota, Mark, or is it Dallas? It's one of the two. Because Fish Dicks will be that weekend. So we've made our opinions. Let us know how you feel. Do you like Leagues Cup? You know, how do you feel about Open Cup? How are you comparing? You know, are those two correlated for you? How are you living your values and expressing your feelings about how MLS has handled these two competitions and what you're doing financially to impact the club and the league in order to thus try and send a message toward them? Mark, I already said most of my thoughts about about the Rapids winning the Rocky Mountain Cup, but I will open the floor to you. Is there anything you'd like to say about the 3-1 loss to LA Galaxy, which who cares because of what happened afterwards, and your takeaways from Rocky Mountain Cup?
Oh, it's all such ancient history. I think the most important thing, and I assume you and the SuperPod guys kind of covered this, which was, I thought, and this has been a season-long thing that was kind of culminating in this moment, Chris Armas's hoisting of the cup in front of the supporters section was so, I'll say it anyways. It was kind of a pivotal change for me in my understanding of Chris Armas. One of the things that I have noticed about the Colorado Rapids staff and front office in the 10 years that I've followed this team is that they've always remained a bit aloof from the fan base. You know, they didn't encourage the players to go and kind of like give high fives or like, you know, raise their arms in front of the supporter section. The most famous painful memory I have of the Rapids was in 2016 when they lost the second leg to Seattle Sounders. And the Sounders, you know, MLS, you know, started to get the stage ready for the cup lift for the Western Conference Championship trophy, which I don't even know why it exists. And the Colorado Rapids season was over. And rather than take a lap around the stadium, a fully sold out 20,000 seat stadium, and applaud the fans who supported them all season in an amazing year, or, you know, go and give a high five to the guys in the supporter section, they just got off the field. And I looked at the person who I'd come with to the match and I went, did they just leave? And she said, yeah. And I went, why? Like, shouldn't they say thank you? And she was like, yeah, they should. And I think that the Chris Armas hoisting the cup and the whole team around him thing and the enthusiasm he showed that he has a different approach to how this team relates to the fan base. And the way he was excited about Rocky Mountain Cup was something that we hadn't heard before. I don't think Anthony Hudson fully understood it. I don't know if Robin Fraser fully understood it. Robin was a notoriously understated, calm, mild-mannered dude. Like, it was hard to get him amped up about anything. Pablo Mastroianni definitely knew what it was all about, but I think Pablo was constantly trying to figure out how to be a coach and not a player and not be too rah-rah. The most famous instance of that was when he came out to the press the first time. I wasn't there, but the head of Burgundy Wave was there and he told me about it afterwards. So this was in like 20, Was it 2013 was his first year as
coach? Would this have been Roche, Mark, or would this wouldn't have been Abby, right?
This
would
no,
have
this been... is Chris White. Chris White was
okay.
my first.
Okay, this
Chris
is a long
White was
time
my
ago.
First editor. Oozworm. Okay. So, and a couple people who we know were there, and after the first practice, they asked Pablo a couple questions, and everything that came out of his mouth was a four-letter word, and he was really, really laid back and really, really honest. And everyone was like, that was awesome. That was so weird. Super cool. And then a week later, they went to training and they interviewed him again, and everything was sound bites. And everything was, we're preparing for the week and, you know, we're building a team, and everything had gone out the window. And so that was my take of Pablo Mastroeni as a coach, which was, while he was with the Rapids, he spent his whole time kind of figuring out how to be a coach. And that also meant like, not showing too much emotion and love to the fan base. That is what I like about Chris Armas and in this Rocky Mountain Cup. It was a moment where he kind of showed his emotional side with the fans, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I said most of my piece on that, Mark. You know, I think we'll talk briefly about the Galaxy game. Chris rotated the squad a little bit. I don't think they were ready to start the game super well. They battled back. They recovered from it. LA Galaxy is a good team. When you start off poorly on the road against a good team in MLS, you have little room for error the rest of the way once that you end up getting caught in behind. I guess the one big takeaway from that game, Mark, is that Kevin Cabral scores in that one and then has an injury and then has elbow surgery, as first reported by Andrew Wiebe. And now he's out 12 weeks, I guess, from last week when the surgery happened, because he went to go see a specialist when I was at training last Friday, so the day before Rocky Mountain Cup, Mark, and then the results of that came over the weekend, so then presumably surgery was sometime between Sunday and Wednesday of last week when the announcement came out. So, Mark, I think that the Rapids do need to target a winger in this window while it is still open. We'll see what happens with the money implications of that, given that there's an open U22 slot and an open international slot now that Lamine Diak is no longer with the team. Do they have a little bit more money to play with because of a potential sale from Moise Bombito? I increasingly do not believe that Moise is leaving this window, Mark. I think the Rapids have set what their price is at. I don't think that Leon thinks that he is worth that right now. And then there was a report from someone from one of the TSN outlets in Canada that also Red Bull Salzburg. I can't remember if that's the Austrian one or the German one, Mark. I always confuse those two, but they're potentially interested in, but
Salzburg's Austria and Leipzig is Germany.
Thank you. So
there's an Israeli U23 on the team.
Okay. I don't see the Australian iteration of the Red Bulls mothership paying more than what Leon would potentially be interested in. So I don't think Moise is leaving, Mark. I think you go and you try and get a winger. There's enough from what Calvin Harris and Omir Fernandez are doing on the right tour, I think you're confident about that. I think the question for Chris Armas to then inform Fran Taylor, Warwick Smith, the front office, is then how much confidence do you have in the resurgence of Jonathan Lewis, who's healthy and scoring goals? And then what do you see about how Kamani Stewart-Baines could then back him up as well? And is there enough cover in that position? Do you like what you have to where it's an urgent thing, or it's a get it done if you can, but we feel like we have cover? If we do the calendar math on this one, Mark, 12 weeks would be the week after the regular season ends. So potentially Kevin Cabral is available, or at least the elbow part of that injury is done going into the start of the playoffs. Whether or not Kevin is training fully at that point, whether or not he's ready for contact drills, what does it look like in terms of his fitness? Because, you know, I've seen him, his hand is in a sling. I don't know that you're running and doing sprints and then dribbling with the ball if your body's in a sling, and if you fall down, you're potentially exacerbating that injury. So Mark, I am emotionally prepared for Kevin Cabral has played his last game of the 2024 season for the Colorado Rapids. And I think that then bears the question, do you try to explore more options at that position, or do Omer Fernandez or Calvin Harris end up playing in their off wing? There's a few things they could discuss, or Darren Yapi out wide, Mark, now that he's finally scored a goal in MLS. I think that does it for Rocky Mountain Cup and LA Galaxy talk, Mark. So Rabbi, let's move on to the actual task at hand, which will be the Colorado Rapids this coming Thursday August 1st, they will be taking on the Portland Timbers. This will be their first appearance back at Providence Park since Chris Armas's first game in charge of the Rapids, which, of course, was that infamous 4-1 loss with the Sam Vines own goal and a really terrible first half to open the MLS season. Mark Evander is still very, very good and a starting caliber number 10 and and a MLS All-Star for the Portland Timbers. So we've seen Diego Chara and Eric Williamson come back, and they're healthy and they're productive. Mark, we have been reporting or claiming that the inevitable doom of the Portland Timbers is coming with the inevitable collapse of Diego Chara's health, and he continues to play there. Former Colorado Rapid Eric Miller, Mark, is still playing at the right back position. We have both been skeptical of the center back and the defensive situation for the Portland Timbers in the past, Mark. It is worth pointing out that Zach McGraw, the center back for the Portland Timbers, scored both goals in their ultimate win over Club León in the game on Sunday. So while we may have some doubts about what the Portland Timbers can do defensively, their defensive players are capable of contributing in an attacking sense. And Mark, the one big acquisition, it was a big talk last time when the Rapids played the Timbers when the window was still open and the Timbers had an open DP slot, has now been filled with designated player Uruguayan forward Jonathan Rodriguez, who's been playing up top and then sometimes on the left as well. He's been a nice piece alongside Evander. Evander's still the better player. You shut down Evander, you mostly starve Rodriguez of opportunities. Mark, what do we see in the Portland Timbers? And how much PTSD are you going to have watching this game on Thursday as we just assume the Rapids are going to give up a goal in the ninth minute? Yeah.
I'm muted. Sorry. We're learning how to use Zoom like 4 years after the pandemic. Yeah. I don't have a lot of PTSD off of that Portland game. I mean, I know they schwacked us pretty good, but then they kind of haven't been the same team since then. I mean, they've been solid, but they had a really rough stretch right after they beat the Rapids. So they basically beat the Rapids and then were totally incompetent for all of March and April, and then put it back together in May and June. So that's the story on Portland. They are all over the place. They have some very talented players. Evander is their probably most talented player. I think he's had a few games where he's been out with injuries, so I don't know what his status is right now. And
he played on Sunday, Mark, so I'd expect him to be available.
Nice. So I think the other thing is they also just recently lost 3-2 to the LA Galaxy. So I think the two teams are kind of matching up fairly evenly now, you know, considering how good the Rapids have been since they played Portland the first time. It's like they were just having a bad day. You know, it's like they came out and they just weren't all ready to go. So I think this will be a very tight matchup. The fact that Portland beat León 2-1 in that first match gives me some hope that they can top the group, even if they just work out a draw with Portland. Diego Chara drew a yellow card in this last game and didn't have a very good game, according to FootMob's rating. But he's still out there. He's still putting in... I'm talking about the Galaxy game by comparison. So they've got, you know, a number of other talented players, Felipe Mora up top, Jonathan Rodriguez on the wing, and Phil Neville in the coaching box. So that should be a really kind of like interesting matchup for the Rapids. I think the other thing that's a difficult intangible to figure out is the Georgi Mihailovic factor. Moyes Bombito starting to get tired factor. I think Cole Bassett reinventing himself in another position is a small concern. It was something that I spoke with him about in our interview. I'm going to drop part two in the next couple of days. But basically Bassett was really excited to be back at the 10. And I asked him straight up, like, you've played the six, which is the defensive midfield role. You know, last year you were playing sort of as a winger, which was always, I think, for me, frustrating. He's been a shuttler in a 4-1-2-1-2. Yeah. Diamond midfield. He's been the shuttler in a diamond midfield.
Yes.
That's a better way of saying it. It's a 4-4-2 diamond. Yes. So he's been asked to do a lot of things. He's a very talented soccer player, and he can slide in a lot of different ways. But, you know, I do wonder. And I think you made the best point, which is if you don't have Kevin Cabral stretching the field, how's that going to work? Jonathan Lewis has been a, you know, midseason revelation. I have written off Jonathan Lewis so many times. I have a novel written about the writing off of Jonathan Lewis, right? Like we could do the great Diego
the great Diego Rubio debate. We could do that for Jonathan Lewis.
We could do that. Why did I forget Diego Rubio's last name? Yeah. I don't know. But anyway,
at the same time, Mark, though, like how many times have we written off Jonathan Lewis? He gets one good performance and then is hot for a month. And then 6 weeks later, like there's plenty of time for Johnny to return to what we have seen him as for the greater part of his Rapids career before.
Jonathan Lewis is good for 3 goals and 5 assists or 5 goals and 3 assists
in 1 month. And then the rest of the season.
In either 8 games or 30 games, it doesn't matter. He's going to have 5 goals and 3 assists. That's what he's going to do. You could give him 100 games a year. He would have 5 goals and 3 assists. I don't know why. It's just what he does.
And he's already produced half of that as well, Mark. So
that's right.
So there's that. I think Chris Armas leans into the emotional and the motivation portion of this, Mark. I know he's not someone who's come with revenge energy for a lot of these games, but I know, you know, we've now written off that 4-1 loss to Portland. That was, you know, it was the first game of the season. They got off to a bad start. That is not who the Rapids were. At the same time, we've seen that Portland Timbers have had some ups and downs. They're still a decent home team overall, but they're below the Rapids in the standings. So that was a overperformance for Portland, and that was an underperformance for the Rapids on that front. So I think I think we can say that that's not who the Rapids are, but at the same time, this is then motivation for, this is another opportunity for the Rapids to prove that this is a new look Rapids. How many times have we seen them do something that they didn't do last year? How significant was it winning the Rocky Mountain Cup, given everything that happened last year, given historically what has happened between Colorado and RSL? This is an opportunity for them to say how the Chris Armas era started is not indicative of what the Chris Armas era is. And so I think you lean into that emotional side, you focus, you play really, really well, you start the game well, and you don't make any simple mistakes. And then for the most part, you know, if you don't do that, if you don't make any mistakes, and if you make like difficult for Evander, like how the Rapids were able to do at times against Diego Luna, Andres Gomez, not so much. I don't think they did that particularly well against Gabriel Peck and against Ricky Pooch for LA Galaxy, but we have seen them shut down or make the most important attacking player for the opponent. We've seen them have quiet nights, or you force everybody else to beat you. And then, so if you do combine that with individuals winning their matchups everywhere else, it's going to be difficult for the opponent to do anything. Worth also pointing out as well, Mark, because we already have a result in the first game, no matter what happens in this game on Thursday, if the Rapids win their Monday home game against Leon, the Rapids are through as well. So any result in this game, Mark, is ultimately a beneficial one. And even if they were to lose this game, the only thing that that does is guarantee that Portland Timbers win the group. They still have the opportunity to do something there. So any result at this point is positive. They don't need to see this game as a must win. I think you look at it as a must result. Mark, I will say right now, the Colorado Rapids get a draw in this game and setting themselves up to I'll say they get at least a point in this game, because obviously there's no draws in Leagues Cup, then it would go to penalties, and I'm not going to predict what's going on in penalties. But I think the Rapids get a point in this game, Mark, and that sets them up to have the advantage over Leon on the weekend. What say you, Rabbi?
Yeah, I don't have any strong opinions about this at all, so I defer to you on this one. I definitely feel like Leon is the team that I think we will probably have to beat, but I'm reticent to say the Rapids should play for a draw against Portland so that they can go out and beat Leon, because I'm not so sure that all the teams in this group aren't evenly matched. It's actually one of the weird things about Leagues Cup that makes me intrigued about it, and to be a little bit different, makes me want to watch games that the Rapids are not playing, unlike you, which doesn't make me a better soccer fan. It just makes me a different soccer fan. That like, I'm really interested to kind of really get a full look at now that MLS teams are kind of like fully, you know, ready to go. And unlike in CONCACAF Champions League, where Liga MX has been playing for a while and MLS teams are still in preseason, like seeing these teams match up and see how we do. So, I mean, last year we got a really good look at it. Last year was a really good Leagues Cup. I do think there's kind of like a difficulty for the American sports fan to focus, as we talked about at the top of the broadcast. Like, we're talking about the Olympics. We're talking about both Olympic soccer and Olympic sports. I watched, you know, Liverpool in these, you know, run up. It's the transfer window for the English Premier League and all of the European leagues. There's a lot of stuff going on in world soccer. Leagues Cup is just not going to rank that high. I'm also, you know, I was asked to cover the Liverpool game, and then the next night would I be available to cover the Riverhounds game. Mm-hmm. You know, there was also the Olympics were happening and opening ceremonies and all this stuff. There's like a lot of stuff going on right now. It's too much. So anyways, sorry, back to the point. I think the Rapids should probably gun for beating Portland, and then they can kind of take it as it is against Leon. But I assume that they're just going to go into these games with the same mentality, which is they're going to play their best squad. They're going to play to win.
Mm-hmm. To your point, Rabbi, like there's a part of me that selfishly would be okay with the Rapids ending their run in Leafs Cup early just so I can get a break. Like, it's the second straight year that it's the break. It was the break for Leagues Cup after, you know, 22, you know, two thirds of the MLS season happening. And I'm burnt out. I could use a couple weekends off. Nice. I got to hike Mount of the Holy Cross, and it was absolutely what I needed. And the fact that I could do that with no soccer on the calendar schedule, especially with Premier League starting up in a couple weeks, was something that I needed. I wouldn't mind a few more weekends of that, given what I've got going on. But so to your point, Mark, there is one concern that I have about the Rapids in terms of their long-term, where their ceiling is. As we've discussed, I don't think there's any question. They've raised the floor. This is a team that's going to make the playoffs. This is a team that should expect to have at least one home playoff game, regardless of the playoff format that we end up seeing. But so where I have concern about, could this team actually make a run at MLS Cup or even make it to a conference final, Mark, which would be a massive accomplishment for this team. I think if you had asked us, you know, November of last year, after hearing the Chris Armas hire and all the skepticism that you and I had prematurely in the early weeks of that news coming out, like simply be a playoff team, win the Rocky Mountain Cup, we would have absolutely taken it. So the notion that this team could advance in the playoffs, have a home playoff game, would be a really big deal. So then looking forward, what then's next? What could they achieve? And so my concern, Mark, is we've seen pretty much every single tough road game they've had against a great team, the Rapids have borderline been non-competitive. And the game plan wasn't executed very well. And Chris Armas has just openly said that they weren't competitive. They weren't themselves in that game. We could say that about both games at the two LA teams, a little bit Seattle Sounders. Granted, we know now that Seattle isn't the same Seattle Sounders that they've been in the past. I look at the FC Cincinnati game as well as another signal of that. So, Mark, I look at the remaining eight league games that the Rapids have. We'll return to league play on Labor Day weekend. They'll be at FC Dallas. Dallas has been better with the new coach bump, but they're still a lesser team, and the Rapids beat them previously. Hosting the Portland Timbers, that'll be an important game. But then you're looking at Sporting Kansas City. They're in a rebuild. Hosting Toronto. Toronto's a dysfunctional mess. At Minnesota, Minnesota's fallen off. Hosting LA Galaxy, that'll be a game. Hosting Seattle Sounders, and then at Austin. So we know, Mark, that the Rapids can dominate bad teams at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. We know they can outplay and get results against good teams at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. 3-2 win over LAFC, 3-2 win over RSL. The remaining road games the rest of this year, if we're talking about that being a concern, can we get data that the Rapids could actually get a result at LA Galaxy in a must-win playoff game? Their road opponents the rest of the year, Dallas, Sporting, Minnesota, Austin. None of those are that. So where I think Leagues Cup is really important is that this is an exercise in a playoff game in knockout football. Even just the two group stage games have a higher level of intensity and importance than you would a group stage game where it's a group of four and you're playing three group stage games. But then this then Mark gets the opportunity for the Rapids to get into a knockout game. Penalties are potentially on the board, playing a good MLS team on the road or playing a much more financially well off Liga MX team. That is the type of opponent that the Rapids are going to have to play and do a good job against in order for them to do anything come playoff time. That is your new opportunity. That is your new test, your new barometer measuring stick game that you would have that's equivalent to an at LAFC, an at RSL, that kind of game. So that's where, even though I don't think the Rapids will win Leagues Cup in that regard, you could see more Leagues Cup games as potentially being a waste. But this is an exercise that will then maybe build some of that sandpaper, build that confidence, and then also, you know, just give an opportunity for them to iterate on improving upon what happened at Cincinnati, at the two LA teams, at Seattle, given that the rest of the road schedule that the Rapids have in league play doesn't necessarily provide that opportunity. So that's something that I'm really excited to see. That is an opportunity, and if the Rapids can take advantage of that and do something with that, I will feel much more confident about the Rapids having to go into the bank against an LAFC team and trying to get a result rather than it being 30 minutes into the game. And I'm like, yeah, LAFC is the better team. They're probably going to win this game by multiple goals. The season's over. Mark,
go ahead. I just want to say real quick, I want to win Leagues Cup. I want to win another trophy. I think the Rapids, I think all MLS fans who are not insane, their ideal cup to win is MLS Cup. I don't think we have the horses this year, but in a short tournament, the Rapids can win a cup, and Leagues Cup would be a great one. So it also would get them a CONCACAF spot, and that would be great because I'm a big fan of CCL.
I am working, listeners. There's a Club León podcast that we're trying to get in touch with and hopefully do something over the weekend after the results against Portland Timbers before the game on Monday. But Mark, just briefly, let's turn to Club León. I'm not sure what to make of this team, Mark. They've played just four games in the Apertura. I would consider them in the middle tier, maybe the upper half of the table, Mark. They're certainly not the Gigantes. They're not Chivas. They're not the two Monterrey clubs. Puebla just won CONCA champions against Columbus. So certainly they're below that tier as well. One of their big acquisitions from the summer, albeit an older one, was Andres Guardado, longtime El Tri player. And then he was playing for Real Betis. He came off the bench in their game against Portland Timbers. But Mark, I think León's still trying to figure out what they are, because between the four league games that they've played and the one Leagues Cup game that they've played, it's been five different lineups, and they came out, Mark, in, according to MLSsoccer.com, a 3-1-4-2. Watching it, not having seen the lineup, I thought it played more like a 3-5-2, which kind of made sense. So, Mark, they're a little bit of an unknown in that regard. I think León, looking at the film of the Rapids, have a very good idea of what the Rapids are going to do. I think León could be a little bit of a wild card. And there's, you know, again, nothing to be said, Mark, about the fact that, you know, there's certainly going to be a lot of León fans who I think will travel for this game. I was looking at, when you were talking earlier in the episode, just what do the Rapids have ticket-wise up on Ticketmaster? And there are plenty of sections in the south and the east and the east section of Dick's Sporting Goods Park that have 100 plus tickets, and you can get into the building for $30, $40. And given what we've seen other Leagues Cup starting ticket prices be, that suggests to me, Mark, that we will not have a sellout on Monday, or if we do, it'll be tickets distributed, and there will be a lot of León green as opposed to Rapids green. But Mark, what, if anything, do we see in León? Is this just a good Liga MX team that the Rapids would be, you know, would be well done to outperform and maybe get a draw in?
I claim mostly ignorance. I just don't know this team very well. I am not familiar with the players in the lineup. They're just not a bunch of guys that I'd ever heard of before. And it's been a couple, because of my need to focus on USL up here in Pittsburgh, it's been a couple of years since I've been able to really spend any time on Liga MX. And even if I could, would it matter? Because they're in preseason. I mean, where they just started Apertura. So, who is this team? What are they doing? What do we know about them? Jonder Cadiz is a Venezuelan player who has 3 goals in 3 matches in the Apertura.
He played for Nashville.
Did he?
I think so. That name sounds right. He was one of their bus DPs in the first year with Gary Smith.
You are right. How do you know everything? That's interesting. The team he played for until this year was called Famalicão, which I'm assuming is in Brazil. And nope, they're in Portugal. So he's back with them. You know, their starting center back, starting goalkeeper, Alfonso Blanco, is 37 years old. So that's kind of interesting. And in his career, he's played only... That's a great question. I have no idea where he's been at most of his career. So, yeah, it's a team that I just don't really know a lot about, and it'll be interesting to see whether the Rapids figure them out any better. Maybe they've just been not a very good... Maybe they're just not a very impressive Liga MX team and we lucked out, but I don't know.
We'll see. Okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves, Mark. We'll talk about León after we see what the Rapids do against Portland. So with that, Mark, let's turn it over to one of our Ask HTHLs, which we got via email from Thomas Cope, longtime listener of the show. So Thomas asks Mark, what percentage of the huge improvement this year is down to coach and what percentage is due to new players? I responded, Mark, to Thomas, so I'll start with that and then throw it to you. Really good Ask HTHL, which I'll discuss further on the show. It's definitely a mix of both. I've been saying for weeks that Navajo and Mihailovic are the highest talent DPs the Rapids have had outside of Tim Howard. So I would say it is more about personnel. The players that were brought in are better, but also the players who were here last year have also improved. But, you know, that is not to discount what Chris Armas has done. But I think certainly, Mark, the talent-wise, the players who were here last year under Robin Fraser are better this year than they were last year. And pretty much every single player who the Rapids brought in over the course of the winter was an upgrade on who was playing there last season.
I'm going to finish my last thought. So, okay. Which is because I had to look it up. So Alfonso Blanco, their center, their starting goalkeeper, it was with Pachuca from 2012 to 2020 and has been with León since 2020 and has 9 appearances in the last 4 years. So he is like their long-suffering backup goalkeeper who is finally getting to start, maybe because they have no other options. This should be really interesting. I think that my only one interesting comment about León is maybe they're not really up for it at goalkeeper. Anyways, on to I have less to say in response to our faithful listener, because I mostly agree with you, Matt. I think it's probably 90% the general manager and the players that were brought in, and 10% the manager. But managers have an impact and they're important, and it really matters to shift the culture, to create a new relationship with players, to be in a good position with other people. It was really interesting. On a related note, Curtis Jones was the player Liverpool threw to the media on Thursday before the game, and he was asked a question that was like kind of a softball. He didn't respond super well to it, which was, what was your relationship with Jurgen? It was effectively, what was your relationship with Jurgen Klopp? And what is your relationship with Arne Slot? And the answer was basically, I love Arne Slot. He's a great guy. And yeah, you know, I wish Jurgen well. You know, it was like, but it was pretty veiled behind fanged teeth. You know, he was like, he didn't really seem like he was a big Jurgen Klopp fan. So that was interesting. So we don't really know. My point of that is we don't really know where the player's relationship was with Robin Fraser at the end. A lot of the players seem to be in their final kind of comments about him, shrugging their shoulders and being like, yeah, you can't fire the players. It's a bummer for Robin. You know, we wish we played better for him, or we wish we'd gotten better results for him. And I wish him well, you know, but it didn't feel, there weren't any players who were like, we loved Robin. Robin was a player's coach. His tactics were brilliant. I don't know how they're ever going to top that. Like, I didn't feel like he was, you know. So anyway, so I think the new relationship with the new manager has an impact. It's not irrelevant.
Rabbi, anything else, or shall we land this plane?
We are all done.
Listeners, you can follow us collectively on the social media platforms at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. Like us on Twitter, Facebook, Blue Sky. I think we still have a Mastodon account, Mark, though I feel like Mastodon's pretty much dead. Any case, you can also email us like Thomas did at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com.
Mastodon was unworkable. It just didn't. It was like you couldn't navigate it. Like, you know, anyways. Yeah.
Thomas, also, Mark, as the head of our merch department, will be dealing with your shirt situation, so certainly let us know about that. Listeners, if for some reason you did not get merch and you paid for and wanted merch, please reach out to us. Mark,
we have a couple of new subscribers that I've reached out to and said, hey, you want a shirt? And I got no answer. So if you're a new subscriber, send us an email and I will check the subscription logs and you will get a shirt.
Find Rabbi's written work at holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can become a paid Highliner and support our work. You can find all of my Rapids written work at burgundywave.com. Got a really good piece that I'm super excited about launching this week on Moise Bombito and him responding to the various rumblings about him. And then also I had a long form 22-minute sit down with Oliver Larraz. So it's about time that the ginger got his due in terms of long form content at The Wave. I think that's it. Rate, review, share, subscribe. You know, tell your favorite friend who is Mexican and who follows a Liga MX team but doesn't have an MLS team about us. And maybe mention that Marcelo Balboa used to play for the Rapids and also so did Pepe Valderrama. And maybe that'll convert them into Rapids fans. Listeners will hopefully see you this weekend to then preview the Monday game against Club León.
Peace.